Okay, today we should finish up the Sanhedrin part of the Chazara. Okay, and I think our plan of action. You tell me if you. The next week we'll do Chazara also, and then the following Monday we'll maybe have the Chazara B'Ksav if you feel that's reasonable. I think that's reasonable, right? And this way we should have time to do everything inside and go slowly and really make the things part of you. Okay? Bezer Shem, as I said, next Shabbos, those that are coming, we have a list. If you still want to come, please let me know early next week and we'll arrange everything for you. And we're looking forward, as I said, we're looking forward to having many opportunities to do these type of things in the course of the year. And Bezer Hashem. Okay. Question number 13. So the Gemara says like this. We discussed yesterday that part of the process of Eidos is that we interrogate the witnesses with three categories of questions, right? The Chakiros, which is the Zman and the Mokom, and the Drishos are about the actual case itself. You know, was it a, if it was a Ritzicha, was it a sword, or was it a knife, was it a gun, was it a, if it was Kilo Shabbos, was it writing, was it turning on the, what exactly was it? That's the Drishos, and then the Bedikos are the details, the tangential details, like, okay, he was Michal Shabbos, but what color shirt was he wearing at the time, and he was near a tree, what time, was it an apple tree, was it a date tree, was it a, what type of tree was it? Okay, so those are the, so the Gemara says on the bottom of Beis Hamidrash that Dvar Torah Echad Dinei Momenos VeEchad Dinei Nefashos B'Drisha V'Chakira, that Midaraisa, both Dinei Momenos and Dinei Nefashos, the witnesses of Dinei Momenos and Dinei Nefashos, require Drisha V'Chakira. And, the pasuk says Mishmar Echad Yelachem, that there's no difference between Mamonos and Nefashos in this regard, that they both have to have these questions asked to the Edom. But then the Gemara says that Matam Amru Dinei Mamonos Lo Bein Drisha V'Chakira, that the Chachamim lifted the requirement of Drisha V'Chakira by Dinei Mamonos. In other words, if you have an aid that's testifying that Reuben lent Shimon money, so even though Midaraisa, he really should have be questioned with all the questions of the Drisha V'Chakira, but Midrabanan, they said no. Why did they say, why did they lift the requirement, Midrabanan? They lifted the requirement because they were afraid that, look, it's a lot of questions. It's a big bechina. And they don't give you the questions before. It's a... You know, it's a big bechina, and the Edom could mess up. And if the Edom mess up, that means the guy won't get his money back. Even though he might duly deserve to get the money back, he won't get the money back, because that's the technicality of the halacha, that you have to bring Edom to prove that the guy owes you the money. So if he's not gonna, if he knows that it's such a hard process, that his, for him to get the money back, it's going to be such a hard process for him to get the... Four words. What are the four Hebrew words that he's going to say? Mali v'tzarazu. Why do I need this pain in the neck? Mali v'tzarazu. What do I need it for? I just won't lend, I won't be a nice guy anymore. I won't lend money. What do I need the headache for then? That I'm going to lend money and he's going to deny it? Is that like three witnesses? And I don't tell the truth, but maybe my witnesses will forget some of the details or make mistakes on the details, and then I'm not going to get my money back, even though I truly deserve to get my money back. So I'm going to say, Mali, that's our result.
It's our result, probably, right?
What? So that's what he's gonna say. And Mimela, people won't get loans. So that's the concept of Shalom. So therefore, Chachamim lifted the requirement, and they said, when you lend money, you're gonna have to bring Aiden, but the Aiden won't have to go through this torturous process of Drisha v'Chakira. They shall lo tinol delos b'fnei lofen, because we don't want that the door be locked in front of the people who want to borrow money. We want that their ability to borrow money should still be, a good ability of borrowing money, and therefore they lifted the requirements. So that's the Gemara. So Tosus on Gimel Amud Aleph, the second Tosus, discusses when we say they lifted the requirement of Drisha v'Chakira by Dinei Mamonos, does that mean only b'hados v'halvos? What about Gzeilos v'Chavolos? So Tosa says that Gzeilos v'Chavolos also, you don't need Drisha v'Chakira. Kidei she'tinol delos b'fnei gazlanim. Because if we're going to say that you need Drisha v'Chakira by Gzeilos v'Chavolos, then that's going to cause people to want to steal more. Because they'll say, I'm going to steal, I'll keep stealing, and I don't have to worry. Because what's going to happen? There'll be witnesses who will testify that I steal, but these witnesses, you think they're going to remember all the details? You think they're going to know the day of the week it was? They're not going to remember. So if there'll still be a requirement of Drisha v'Chakira, that will induce people to steal. So therefore, Moses says, just like the Gemara says, they said you don't need Drisha v'Chakira by loan cases to induce people to give loans, so too, you don't need Drisha v'Chakira by Gzeilos cases in order to deter people from stealing. In order to deter people from stealing. So therefore, the Tosa says that also when we say that Dinei Mamonos do not need Drisha v'Chakira, it's not only Hodos v'Halvos, but even Gzeilos v'Chavolos. That's the first opinion in Tosas. The second opinion of Tosas, that's a chiddush, because the Gemara never says it. The Gemara only speaks about Lo Tinol Delos b'fnei Lavin. The Gemara never speaks about this idea of that Tilo Delos b'fnei Gazlonim, even though you could say it's a Svara, but that's not found in the Gemara. So that's a chiddush that Tosa is saying, that because the Pashup Shot in the Gemara is, even though the Gemara speaks about Dinei Mamonos, but the reason the Gemara gives is Tilo Delos b'fnei Lavin, which implies that this dispensation of not requiring to have Drisha v'Chakira is only b'hados v'alvos. But Tosa says, no, even by Gzeilos v'Chavolos, you don't need Drisha v'Chakira. The Od Yesh Lomar, then Tosa says another opinion, contrary to the first opinion, that Gzeilos v'Chavolos nami bo Drisha v'Chakira, that Gzeilos v'Chavolos also need Drisha v'Chakira. V'lo matinon ela hodos v'Halvos. That's the Poshup Shat. That when the Gemara says that Gzeilos v'Chavolos, that Dinei Mamonos don't need Drisha v'Chakira, that's only by Hodos v'Halvos, because there's a Svara of Kadesh Lo Tilo Delos B'nei Lavin. But Gzeilos v'Chavolos, that's the original halacha, is kept, that you do need Drisha v'Chakira by Gzeilos v'Chavolos. So you have two days in Tosas when the Gemara says that they were the requirement for Drisha v'Chakira was lifted by Dinei Mamonos. Does that mean that it was lifted also by Gzeilos v'Chavolos? Or no, it was only lifted by Hodos v'Halvos, but Gzeilos v'Chavolos do require Drisha v'Chakira. And even though you might think that it'll induce people to steal, we're not worried about that. The only concern is that we're worried about more is that people shouldn't stop lending money. But we don't think it's going to really induce people to steal. Whereas the first opinion says, no, we're afraid that it's going to induce people to steal. So therefore, there was a hakana also made not to have drisha mechakira by Xerus Kabbalah. So again, first day of Tosa says that there's no drisha mechakira both by Hadrabadim, both by Hados Alvos and by Xerus Kabbalah. And the second opinion says, no, there's no drisha mechakira only by Hados Alvos, but by Xerus Kabbalah, there is drisha mechakira. Yes.
Why, according to the first opinion, Tosa, and you should have done away with it by all other cases, also including any cautions, because, you know, someone could forget or be scared, you know, mess up following details, and you just with the heroes by money cases, they do the same thing by murder cases or Kal Shabbos cases. And therefore, people keep you Kal Shabbos or murder or whatever it is, because they know that they'll get away with it. Why is there a difference between money cases and all other cases?
In other words, why did they make it?
Only one party.
But the witnesses
still
might mess up, so
they're
forget details.
In other words, the main concern is that other people shouldn't lose out.
And people are assuming it matters.
Right. But first of all, the takanas usually can only make by mamonos, because mamonos Beis Din has the koach to make these takanas. Then the Gemara talked later on in Tosis. He talks about the fact that they were used to be dan dinim bebavil gzeilus v'chavolus. And the question is, in Bavel there was no smuchin. So how were they done gzeilus v'chavolus in Bavel? And Tosus gives you two cases. The one case where somebody built something on the Yesomim's property, which they had no right to. Then the case of Hanan Bisha, the first wide line, Hanan Bisha. Hanan is his name. Bisha is his title. Bisha is bad. Bad Hanan. He was a bad guy. Why? The Takalei Lachavri was, he used to blow shofar in people's ears. And that wasn't so good. So there's a halacha is, if you blow shofar in somebody's ear, then you get a penalty. You get a penalty for blowing shofar in somebody's ear. That's a knas. So they made him pay the knas. So how could they pay the knas in Bavel? So Tosa says, one teretz is that if the guy already took the money for the knas and then the guy grabs it back, then Beis Din can intervene. They're not going to tell you to pay the knas, but if the guy already took the knas and then the guy is fighting about it, then they can intervene. Or what it means is that the Beis Din and Bavel could akvei ladina le'eretz Yisrael. They could make the people in Bavel go to Eretz Yisrael. That's what it means, that they made them pay knas. Not that they can make them make knas, but they can make them go to a Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael where they have the smuchim, and there they'll pay the knas. And then there's a Yesh Meforshim in Tosis that says Dafka Gzeilus Sha'al Yidei Chavolos. In other words, maybe Gzeilus and Chavolos you would do Shlichusayu, but Gzeila shal yidei chavolos, meaning the case of a gzeila where there was also a chavola involved, in other words, the guy punched him in the face and took his wallet, so that's no shchiach. And that, you're not done in Bavel. But maybe gzeila salon or chavola salon, maybe that's considered shchiach, and you would say shlichusayu, which we explained that shlichusayu is only when there's milsa de shchiach, v'ispe chesar and kis. But that, of course, is only in the realm of mamonos. You can have shlichusayu where there's no chisar and kis, like by geiris. There's no chisar and kis by geiris, but that doesn't require chisar and kis because that's not in the realm of mamonos. In the realm of mamonos, if you want to have shlichusayu, it's only by what? You also have shliach v'yisbei chisar and kis. Okay, that's number 13. Number 14. Ba'er divrei ha-tosas, the ruba del rad yezavni lo choshev kihanech ruba. Right, that was the tosas on Gimel of Beis. The Tosas at the bottom of the page, Dine Mamonos Lo Kol Shekein, where we discuss the following. The Gemara, the famous Talmudic principle, is Mamotzi Mechaveiro Alav Harayim. That if a person wants to extract money from somebody else, like he wants to say that the sweater you're wearing is really my sweater. So if you say that to the Bezdin, they'd say, go fly a kite. What do you mean? He's wearing a sweater. Why do you think it's yours? But if I bring witnesses that it's mine, so then I can make him give it to me. Because that's a right proof. So the question is, what is... You can't bring witnesses, but you have a rove to prove your point. What's the case? So the case is the famous case in the Gemara of Bava Basra, where a person bought an ox, and it turned out the ox was a nagchan. The ox was a very rowdy, wild ox, and the fellow who paid for the money and got the ox said, I want my money back, because this ox is a wild ox. And therefore, I consider it a mekakos. So Rav's opinion is that you get your money back. But Shmuel says no. Now, what's the reason why I want my money back? Because what's the debate? The debate is the following. The fellow who sold it to you said, I knew it was a wild ox, but I still sold it to you because I figured that you were going to shecht it. You were buying it for consumption. So if it's not consumption, who cares that it's wild? You're going to take it home and you're going to kill it right away. So therefore, I have no problem that I sold it to you. But the purchaser said, no, I had in mind to buy it for plowing, for rabia, for plowing. So if I had in mind to buy it for plowing, I want it to be a normal ox because I'm going to keep it alive. So therefore, I need it to be normal. Now, the Gemara says most people buy it for what? Plowing. So most people buy it for plowing. So therefore, it should be a mekachtos. So because most people buy for plowing, so if you're buying for plowing, then you deserve to get a normal ox. You shouldn't get a crazy ox, a boring ox, right? So the fellow who wants his money back has a rove on his side, right? He has a rove on his side. He deserves to get his money back because the rove of the people buy it for what? For rabia, flour. So therefore, the question is, when the Gemara says "Amotzi mechaveiro alav haraya," so raya certainly means eidim, but is rove a good enough raya or not? So the Gemara has a machlokas. Rav says it is a good enough raya. And Shmuel, who we pass the like, says, Ein holchim b'momon acha harov. That, which means, when it comes to momon, when it comes to extracting money from somebody, and you don't have witnesses, the only proof you have is a rov on your side, rov is not a good enough proof to extract money from somebody else. I'm not saying if I'm a rov haraya, but rov doesn't cut. Doesn't make the cut. That's the opinion of Shmuel. So what's that? So Tosa says he doesn't understand. I mean, rove is good by dine nefashos, right? We kill people based on rove, right? How do we know that? So we gave many examples. A person hits his father and takes blood out of his. He bruises his father. So the halacha is that you kill the son for doing such a thing, even though he didn't kill his father, he just bruised his father. A son who bruises his father, v'derech kilkul, that he needed. Maybe one day I'll give you the shear on the discussion whether the doctor could operate on the father. That deserves a whole shear on that topic. Right, you're a dentist and you're gonna drill your father's tooth, or you're a surgeon, and you're going to cut your father, is that permissible or not? But certainly, if it's not there, refuah, certainly then that's the issue of Make Oviv. So first it is Make Oviv, so he's Chayav Misa. Now the Gemara says, how do you know who's your father? your mother, you know, you came out of your mother's womb, so we know who your mother is. How do you know who your father is? Maybe the mother was Nazanek. So the Gemara says that even if the mother was Nazanek, Rob Gilo Sakhar Abal. Most times the woman who will be Nibal will beat her husband, even if sometimes she's Mazana. So the knowledge of your father is only based on Rob. It's only based on Rob. So how do we know that the person who you hit was your father? Maybe it was somebody else. If you hit somebody else, even though it's not, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to bruise someone else either. But if you don't get killed for bruising someone else. You only get killed if you bruise one of your parents. Then you get Misa for Maka Ovis. So the Gemara says that, one second, that we follow Rove. And Rove is a good enough proof that to even kill somebody. Right? All Judaism is based on Rove. Right? The milk that you had for breakfast is based on Rove. How do you know the milk was kosher? Because it came from a kosher animal. How do you know the animal was kosher? No one checks every single point of the animal that possibly could be traced. You check the main places. That is Shia, that will be tricked. But you don't check all 18. If you do that, you're on forever. You don't check all 18. So every time you eat meat, you're following Rove. Every time you drink milk, you're following Rove. So we follow Rove all over. So how come, so Tosa is a kasha, how can Shmuel say that by Dinim Amra, Zayn Alti Babobo Rakai Rove, it should be a Kalvachomer from the Fushas? If we follow Rove by the Fushas, Kalvachomer by Mamdas. So how can Shmuel say such a thing? So Tosa says you're right. Shmuel should agree that Rove is good even by moments. Ah, so why ain't Olchi b'moment acha Rove in the case of Radya? The answer is, Tosa says, because that Rove was not a good Rove. It was not a good Rove. And I will explain why. Since it wasn't a good Rove, that's why we don't follow it by the moments. But in a Hanani, if it would have been a good rove, then a good rove, you could even be Motzi Mom. Ain't Olchi B'Momen Acha HaRove, only by a rove Garua. But a good rove, then even Shmuel would agree. So the question is, why is this rove an inferior rove? So we discussed two pshatim, why this rove is an inferior rove. The pshat of the Bach, and the pshat of the Schweitzer. Right. The joke of Rabbi Yonah Schneibschitz, you remember, I don't have to review, right? Oh. Right? They asked him, if you get water, you give it to your father first, not to your mother. But your father's a Suffolk, your mother's a Vada, so you should give it. So he answered, but if you give it to your mother, then that's not covered. What's he saying? The reason I'm giving it to you first is because I'm not sure who my father is. So that's not, that's extra credit. okay, that was the Rabbi Yonah and Eibschitz 4-year-old story. So why is this robe an inferior robe? That is the question. Why is this robe an inferior robe? So, so the Bach says the reason why this robe is an inferior robe, you know why? Because, what do you say, most is Laradia. So the Bach says, so it could be like this, that most animals that are sold for plowing. But most people who buy for Shechita. What does that mean? In other words, you'll have people coming to the store to buy animals. So you'll have 100 people coming, but they're not going to buy a whole animal each. They're going to buy parts of an animal. So 100 customers that come will come and buy, amongst the whole 100, they'll buy 10 animals. Amongst the whole 100, they'll buy 10 animals. Right? But then, you'll have one farmer who'll come in, and he'll buy 1,000 for his big estate. So, if you'll say how many axes were sold, 1,000 were sold for plowing,
and 100 was sold for consumption, for eating.
Yeah, but how many people bought for plowing and how many people bought for eating? One person bought for plowing, 100 bought for eating. It's just 100 only bought 10, and that one bought 1,000. So from the perspective of the animals, there were more animals that were sold for plowing. But from the perspective of the people, there were more people who bought for eating. So that's why that robe is inferior. Because a good robe would mean that from both perspectives, it's robe. If it would be from both perspectives, from the perspective of the animal and from the perspective of the wife, buyers would be in the same camp, they would both be in the Rabbi camp, then that would be a good robe, and then even Shmuel would have agreed. But since the Bach explains that it's not that the case, it's only robe from the perspective of the animals, but not robe from the perspective of the buyers, therefore what? It's inferior. And therefore, a holki b'momon, only achar robe, zu. Good. That is the pshat of the Bach. Then the Shmaitzer says another pshat. And the Shmaitzer's pshat is based on the Ramban in the Milchamas. How does it go? It's like this. The Gemara in Kiddushin has the following discussion. We know, we discussed last year that there's Erisin and there is Nesuin. Right? Erisin is the giving over the ring. Eishes ish lo beis habal. Nesuin is the chuppah. Eishes ish beis habal. Fine. But then there's a step before that, which in English we call engagement. That's called shiduchim. And in the time of the Gemara, that was the time that the Tanaim were written. Right? The Tanaim were a document that was drawn up that to say, and a kinyan was made, that each party obligated themselves that if they would back out of the marriage, they would pay the other party a certain sum for the embarrassment, etc. And that was the Tanaim, and that was done at the Shiduchim. That, today, we don't do that. We write Tanaim at the wedding. So that's... Well,
some people do.
Yeah, I'm sure in some Hasidic circles where the whole marriage thing is like a very business-oriented deal, you know, that they do that, you know, where money is like a big part of the whole proceedings of who's giving who this money and that money, and money is a very big thing in certain circles. So therefore, they are ready at the time of the engagement, which was the old custom at the time of the... Yeah, I'm sure that right. But in our circles, it's not done. The Tanaim is written at the wedding, which is a little strange because you're already having the wedding now. What? Right. Seeing. Right. Yeah, I'm sure there are other people who don't do it either. Don't do Tanaim, but. It's a couple extra kibbutzim you can give out, so why not, you know, why not do tanoim? So that's what shiduchim are. Shiduchim means the engagement, and that's when they wrote the tanoim. And so halachically, nothing was chal at the time of the shiduchim, right? It's not a din like we discussed last year of Chasan Domele Melech. So even whatever shittas we discussed, when you start the din of Chasan Domele Melech, but that doesn't come till, you know, earliest maybe from the Ofruf or something like that. But the Shiduchim is not, even though colloquial we call it a Chasan and a Kala, but halachically that's not the status yet of a Chasan and a Kala. But so that's called the Shiduchim. So the Gemara discusses what is the status of presents that are given from the what's called the Meshudach to the Meshudeches, right? That's the technical term for it. For the male to the female, the Meshudach to the Meshudeches. What is the status of those presents? Do we have to worry that the presents were given L'shem Kiddushin? And if Chas V'Sholem they break up, so then there would be a requirement of a get, or not. So the Gemara says that there were two customs. Some communities had a custom that they, at the time of the engagement, they would give presents, shalol l'shem kedushin, and then later on, those were called the sivlonos, and later on, they would do the kedushin. That was in some communities. Other communities, no. They would never give presents beforehand, during the engagement. First they would do the kedushin, and then they would give the presents afterwards. Now, the way that Rabbeinu Tam has the girsa, that most communities what? First gave presents shalol l'shem kedushin, and later on, like today, right? The person who's engaged gives the woman presents shalol l'shem kedushin. That's the engagement ring. Eilecha present gadol mizeh, right? So that's shalom l'shem kedushin, and then later on is the kedushin. That's what most people. And then there were a minority of places that first did the kedushin and then the presents. So in those cases, if someone would give a present after the engagement, we have to worry that present was given what? The shame kedushin, because no one ever gives presents before the kedushin. So if he gave presents, obviously the present must be the kedushin. So the Gemara has a discussion. So what do you do if someone gives presents after the? What do you do if someone gives presents after the engagement, after the shidduch? So the Gemara says that we're choshesh l'sivlonos. In other words, we say that the sivlonos that are given, we say that we have to worry that the l'shem kedushin. That even though most people don't give sivlonos l'shem kedushin, right? Most people only the presents that are given before the kedushin are shalom l'shem kedushin. But since there's a miyat of people that only give presents after the kedushin, so we have to worry that the present he gave was l'shem kedushin, and with choshesh l'sivlonos, even though it's the minority. So the question that the Ramban asks is, how come we don't follow the rov? Don't we always follow the rov? And if rov people who give presents after the engagement is shalom l'shem kedushin, so how come the Gemara says that the presents that are given, you have to worry that they're l'shem kedushin? That's only the minority. So the Ramban has this yisod that there are two types of rov. That this rov that most people give presents shalom l'shem kedushin during the engagement period, that's a rov of mina ka'olam. In other words, that's a rov of what people do. This is the societal norm. So societal norms could change. And even during the time that the societal norm is one way, you could decide that you want to be different than the societal norm. Right? You could decide you want to be different than the societal norm. Right? So therefore, that role is not a strong role. Because any time a person can decide, I want to be different. I want to be different. And I'm going to what? I'm going to switch. I'm going to buck the system. And I'm going to give kedushin first, and then So therefore, at any whim of your desire, you can buck the system, buck the trend. So then we can't say that we're going to follow the rov. We can't say we're going to follow the rov, and therefore if he gave. Again, this doesn't apply to what I said, where we clearly don't give, because it's clear that the presents that are given to what I said, no one, but I'm saying in that society where there are people who did it,
So then you could always say, I'm going to be like those people. Today, no one does it. Today, it's clear that the presents that are given are Shalom L'Shem Kiddushin. So no one has to suspect that the presents, unless he bamish the fair shed it in front of witnesses, that these presents should be L'Shem Kiddushin, then that's different. Just like the high school kid who said that the girl in his class, and then they required the kid to be a gay. But, right, but in a situation where you want to bump the system, so then we're not gonna be follow the robe and say you can get away without a get, because maybe you decided that you're gonna be the one who's gonna bump the system. You want to change and you want to be like the minority, even though most people are this. And therefore, in that situation, you don't follow the robe. You have to be choshesh for the meal. However, in a case where the Mishnah in Yevamos discusses the halacha of Yibum, right? So the halacha is that if you have two brothers and one brother is married without any kids and the brother dies, so the halacha is that his brother is supposed to marry the Alman, right? And even though we don't do this bezmanazeh in most communities, we only do chalitza, we don't do yibum, but that's the ikur din of the Torah is to do yibum. Now, if there were children, if the brother-in-law had children, then there's no mitzvah of yibum. The only mitzvah of yibum is if there's no children. If there is children, there's no mitzvah of yibum. And therefore, it's not only that you're exempt from yibum, you're also to do yibum. Because normally it's also to marry your sister-in-law. That's an issacharis to marry your sister-in-law. It's only the mokum mitzvah yibum, it's permissible. So if it's not a mitzvah yibum, then not only you're not allowed, then it's an issacharis. So it's interesting. In certain situations, marrying your sister-in-law is a mitzvah, and in certain situations, it's an issacharis, depending upon whether the mitzvah applies because there were no kids or not. So the Gemara the Mishnah has a discussion of a situation where they were doing Yibum when they were still young, below the age of Bar Mitzvah. In other words, you had a 15-year-old brother married to a 10-year-old woman. I mean, in those times in the Gemara that was common, not in our times. And then the 15-year-old brother died, and he left over his 9-year-old brother. Now the 9-year-old brother does Yibum with the 10-year-old sister-in-law. So the Mishnah says, that's fine. We'll do Yibum together right now. So the question that is asked is, how can you let them do Yibum now? Maybe when they're going to be at the age of maturation, there are people that don't mature. That they don't, their body doesn't mature in a way that they can properly produce, and live as a married couple. They will never mature. They're islandists, or Swiss, right? They don't have that the biological capability. So if they don't have the biological capability and they're living together, then again, there's no mitzvah. And then it's an issur. So why don't we say we should wait till they get older and to see if they will both biologically mature, and then we'll see and let them do yibum. Why do we let them do yibum when they're still too young to know whether they will whether they biologically matured or not? So the halakha is, as explained there in Yevamos, as to the packet, because we follow Rove. We have a right to follow Rove. That most people, even that are young kids, we know that they're going to biologically mature. And there might be one in a million that won't, but the Rove will mature biologically. And therefore, we can be subject on the Rove even to do the evil now. So the Ramban says that Rove is a better Rove, because that's called a Rove in Teva. That's a Rove that's in nature. That's a Rove that you can't choose. You can't choose not to be part of that rove. If you're, but if Rav will make you that way, that's the Teva, that's the way it's going to be. It's not like the case of Did you have in mind to give the present for Kiddushin, or do you have in mind to give the present just for a present? That rove is not a biological rove, so you can decide. I want to buck the system. I want to be from the mir. So that's very fluid. That's very iffy. That's up to you. So a rove that's left in your hands, that's what? That's a worse rove. But a rove that's in teva, and you can't change. In a normal way, right? It's going to happen, but that rove, for sure, we're going to follow the rove, and we're not going to worry that, yeah, there are some people that don't biologically mature. We don't have to worry about that, and we let them do. So that's the Ramban. So the Sheikh Schneitzer uses this Ramban to explain that posis by the ox. He said, the posis says that the case of the ox is an inferior rove, and you can't get your money back based on that rove. You want to say the rove people buy oxes for plowing. You want to say rove people buy oxes for plowing, and therefore you want your money back. Nothing doing. Why? Because it's not a good rove. Why? Why isn't it a good rove? Because this is a rove that's totally on what you desire. It's not a rove in teva. It's a rove in minna. So a rove in minna is an inferior rove. So that's what Tosis means to say, that rove, we're not going to be motzi molin based on that rove, because that is an inferior rove. But Hashem ain't came out. A good rove, even Shmuel would agree, but that's an inferior rove. Just like the Ramban said, the case of the Kiddushin, the rove is inferior because you can decide you want to be from the beard. So too the purchasing of the ox is an inferior rove, because you can decide that even though most people buy axes for plowing, that you want to buy axe for shechita. So that's the way the Sheikh Schmeitz explains that just like the Ramban, using that Ramban's explanation of the Gemara Kiddushin of Siblonos, he applied that same principle to explain the Tosfos, and that's the Sheikh Schmeitz's strength in the
Tosfos.
Because Agamara had the Kabbalah Chomer that Mar says by the Moshes he followed the rove, so Kabbalah Chomer by Mamlus. So he says, so how could Shmuel say otherwise? So he said, no, Shmuel didn't say otherwise. So Shmuel only meant it in a very specific area when the rove is no good. If the rove would be good, then even Shmuel would agree. All right, guys?
If the rove by the test case, you're calling draws blood from the father. The rove is that, it's a person, it's based on a person. I mean, the rove is that most women won't go.
Yeah, who asked this question? Somebody asked this. Well, Tarafar, you see, we have Chazar in the questions too. Oh. Good, no. Tarafar asked this question, Shlita. And now you're having these questions. That's very good. In other words, you're saying that how come we kill based on the rove of rove Bilas Akharbala, for that's also a rove that's totally. It's not a rove in teva, it's a rove in choice, in minav. She could always decide that I want to buck the system and have more beers with some other man than her husband.
It's in the pashos. This is mamon.
He's saying that's part of teva also?
No, teva is not based on mamon.
No, it's not.
It's still a decision, no? What do you say, Eli Cole?
But if I meet somebody who, let's say, has something with. What happens to the guy who's the doctor who's the woman? It's not, a lot of times it's not easy for you, but if something really substantial that they have to lose, they're not going to risk this by
being resigned with their patient.
So it's not a specific situation. So I guess they have more to lose than what they have to gain.
Right.
So you could also say the argument over here that it's not basically the majority of women realize what they have to lose is a lot more than what they have to gain, and that's another factor that's also
and therefore that makes it a good role.
That's also a factor that's taken into account for the role.
So that makes it a better rove, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I will review the Gemara in a second. Let me ask, yeah. Yeah,
but that whole world, like, you know, the world of power of that kid, the majority of women who are married, the majority of the time have an idea with the husband.
All right.
If the Roman top of the road makes it not as good, while most of the other would be in the regular road.
Alright. Yeah, so what's your point?
It's a double road. It's not, the road isn't as good.
In which case?
By a husband. Management question.
Yeah, why? It's not as good because...
Because it's a double road. It's a road on top of another road. You need two roads there.
Strengthening the question.
Uh-huh. Why is it two rows?
Majority of women who are married, majority of the time, via...
with their husband, right.
Majority of the women...
Yeah, it's the same. Okay, yeah. Let's just say, like Ellie said, that for a different reason, it's a... Right. Then the case in Yuma, one second, is... What's the case in Yuma? The case in Yuma is where you have a child, a tinok, in a carriage, in a baby carriage, abandoned in the street. So what's the status of this kid? Is he Jewish or not? So the Gemara says you follow the Rov. If Rov people in the community are Jewish, you can assume he's Jewish, and if not, not. Within reason. The Gemara says if you want to marry, then you should convert. Anyway, but the rove to determine this abandoned baby is based on the rove. So now the Gemara discusses when this kid grows up and he owns an ox, and an ox scored his ox, so do we have to pay? So normally the halacha is an ox of Yisrael that gores an ox of an Akum, you don't have to pay. So here, the Tosa says that if Rova Yisrael, then you're going to have to pay the ox, you're going to have to pay this person, the abandoned kid who's now a grown-up, you're going to have to pay him for goring his ox. But the question is, why do I have to pay him? The only reason I know he's Jewish is only based on Rov. And ain't holchim b'momonacha harov. So that's the Shmaitz's kasha on Tosa. Tosa says, in the case of Rov Yisrael, you're gonna what? In the case of Rav Yisrael, you're gonna what? You're gonna have to pay for goring his ox because he's Jewish. But the only reason we know he's Jewish is based on a rov. And you can't ain't holchim b'momonach harov, because if he'd be a goy, I wouldn't have to pay. Only if he's a Jew, and ain't holchim b'momonach harov. So what's the pshat? So the Schmeitzer says very well, based on this Tosus in Sanhedrin, is very well, because Tosus Shita is that when Shmuel says ain't olchim b'momonach harov, that's only a rov garua, and the reason why it's a rov garua we explained in two ways, either based on the Bach or based on the Schmeitzer. But if that rov is a rov that's good because it's a Jewish community and most of the people are Jews, there are a couple of Italians there, but most of them are Jews, so that's a good rov. So then even Shmuel would agree, when there's a good rov, then what? Then the halacha is that that we follow rov even to be motzi mamon if it's a good rov, and that case is a good rov. Okay, so that was the Gemara in Yuma with the Shmaitz's addendum to that. Okay, are there any questions as to what we did today? What did we do today? We did question number... We only did two questions today, but they were long. What? I can't hear you. One more left, right. We have one more left. You did Nechshev's Kiriya. Should we start that now? Do you have any questions on what we did today? If not, we could... discuss Yediyah Kiriyah. So that might take a little time. We'll have time. No? We should leave it for Monday. Yeah. Okay, yeah, we don't want to take away from... Okay, so let's end the Chazara now here for today. Yeah, so Sunday, Rez Hashem, call Isha. Call Isha on Sunday. Call Isha.
Away from Monday.